yet another episode of the show that's trying to get to the bottom of the trends that are shaping business and industry today. My goal is very simple. For us to get better at what it is that we do, and I assume you want to, we've got to find the experts that can lead us through a new way of thinking, a new way of talking to our customers, a new way of talking perhaps to our teams, as well as maybe even to ourselves. We're looking for people who can help us get better. And that's the theme of the show and will continue to be the theme of the show. And it was actually in thinking about this late yesterday afternoon that I began to explore what it is that I've been doing in these past 3 years on the show. And it's just that. I think it becomes more and more clear to me that the better I can help the people that listen and kind of give me their time, the more fulfilled I feel in doing this work. And today I'm going to bring you a gentleman, a friend of mine. I met him a couple of years ago out in San Diego, who teaches some really phenomenally insightful methods around branding, on things that you and I can do to inexpensively brand ourselves in the minds of our customers, as well as, and I think this is significant as well, as our in our employees. So what are the simple, inexpensive steps to really achieve brand awareness across your customer base, whatever your market may be? His name is Gare Maxwell, and we'll talk to him when we come back from this first break. Thinking through what it is that I'm trying to do for the listeners of this show, I want to recite the significance of the webinar that we've got coming up. Mark Sanborn is a friend of mine, and he has sent me some videos that I'll begin posting on social media here before too long regarding the webinar that he and I will be putting on jointly here in a couple of weeks. The date is July 15th at noon Central, and Mark and I will be on with him leading the conversation. Mark is a leadership and customer service expert. He's got 7 or 8 books to his name. The most popular and the biggest seller is one called The Fred Factor, and it has been copied into dozens of languages and a really motivational, inspirational book. When I talked to Mark about this webinar, I said, "Hey man, do you have some forward-looking thoughts? I don't want to know what's going on out there today. I want to know what it's going to become. And I want my people that subscribe to the webinar to have some insights into what the workplace and the marketplace is going to become once the new abnormal is over." And Mark said, "I do." He's been gathering the research, and he will lead us through that conversation. We're building this webinar, folks, to be an event for your team. And what I mean by that is we've arranged with 2 pizza companies now, another one just came on this morning, to offer both 25 and 30% discounts on pizza the day of the webinar. When you register for the webinar, you'll get that code so that that day you can order the pizza using that code and get either a 25 or 30% discount. The 2 pizza companies are Mellow Mushroom at the corner of O'Shell and University and Marco's Pizza, all their different franchises in this part of the country. So go to whatsworkingcam.com. There you'll find the registration link. Click on that link, register, put the event on your team's calendar, gather them in the conference room, gather them in the warehouse, wherever it may be. Watch this webinar with Mark and me about what the new normal is going to be like when the new abnormal is finally over, and discuss it with the team. We'll have some Q&A, and also Mark is offering some deep discounts into all his learning materials as a result of your registration. You'll get his code too. Like I said, we got Gare Maxwell coming up, a friend of mine I met in San Diego. I want to point you continuously to our social media sites. There you'll find more and more information both about the webinar that I'm talking about as well as about upcoming shows. Speaking of upcoming shows, this is actually past tense now. Last night, Ed Bridgman was the guest on What's Working. He is really a forward-thinking expert on the RV homesteads, the RV communities across the area. It is not, I learned, an RV park. An RV park is along the side of the interstate. It's where you pull over and rest for the night on the way to your destination. Ed is developing a destination in South Mobile County in the Fowl River area near Bailey's Corner, and is putting the most advanced and forward-thinking ideas around RV communities in that destination. It's really quite phenomenal. When we come back, I'll have Gare Maxwell on the line with me. You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. What's Working is brought to you by Regions, and we'll be right back. Cam Marston. You're listening to What's Working. What's Working is brought to you by Regions, and the goal of the show is to uncover the trends shaping the workplace and the workforce today. Our goal is to find the business leaders and learn what it is they're doing, or find the business experts and hear from them what we should be doing to get better at what it is, whatever it is that we do. And to that end, I have on the line with me Gare Maxwell. Gare is a global authority on helping organizations create iconic, larger-than-life brands that attract legions of customers and top talent without having to use any pushy sales methods or tactics. Gare shares clear insight and techniques on how to create and sustain an irresistible brand that becomes a giant magnet on steroids, naturally and subtly attracting endless inbound business opportunities. Sounds good to me. Gare, thank you so much for your time. Welcome to What's Working.
Well, it's great to be here, Cam, and I really do appreciate the invitation because, if I recall correctly, we met at a legendary golf course called Torrey Pines in San Diego, and now here we are in Mobile, Alabama, which, correct me if I'm wrong, is famous not only as the home of Hammer and Hank Aaron, but also Willie McCovey, Bart Starr, Jimmy Buffett, and somewhere in there, Winston Groom, Alva Vanderbilt, and Cam Marston. Is that correct?
Gare, this is going to be an excellent interview. I love the way this has started off. Yes, you are right on all of those accounts. And I want to add one more thing that my community and I are both very proud of. We are also the home of Mardi Gras. You've certainly heard of New Orleans Mardi Gras. It started here. And I want you to add that to your list of Mobile things to say going forward. I really appreciate the research you've done to get ready for this interview. Thank you very much.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm fascinated because Mobile, Alabama is one of those towns, and I could go on and on. I mean, Tim Cook from Apple and Bubba Wallace, who, of course, has been in the news recently with NASCAR, all the way back to Satchel Paige. But Mobile, Cam, is one of those towns I just haven't been able to make it to yet. And of course, now with COVID, everything suspended as far as travel and speaking and those types of speaking engagements are concerned, but it's one of those towns that I've always just wanted to go see. The legend of Bart Starr still speaks to me very, very much, and I know that's where he's from. And of course, as a kid, I just idolized Hank Aaron.
Yeah, well, his home is a museum here in town, and they've got the stadium here, which not exactly sure what's going to happen to it, but it's named after him. But we could talk forever about how I'm so proud of my town, but I'm deeply appreciative, Gare, of your willingness to kind of to learn about this stuff. And if you ever come to town, it would be me that would be delighted and proud to show you this place. We're a proud community. We're strange folk down here, but a very proud and strange folk. And I love it. I love it. But let's get into your expertise versus the remarkability of this town. And I want to introduce you to my audience here. The people listening to me and the station and the show in particular, we've developed kind of a fingerprint for what it is that we do. These are often business leaders of some sort. These are often decision makers in their businesses of some sort. It's not exclusively that way, but the people that I hear from at the end of every show are usually people that says, gosh, those were good ideas, Cam. I'm going to begin to implement them. And that word implement is key to the whole thing. These are implementers. These are action-oriented men and women who are listening to this show. And I want you to teach them about the branding process and the way that you see it. Now, your newest project that you sent me in an email, a link, is called Big Little Legends. And the final image of that remarkable YouTube video that you shared with me had so many different images on it. And I'm going to read some of them all. You had the Zappos logo. You had Khan Academy. You had John Kennedy, Elon Musk, NASA, Muhammad Ali, Patagonia, Elvis Presley, and one of my favorites, Café Du Monde. Give me what these things have in common. Big Little Legends, these brands, yeah. Go Gare Maxwell.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great segue, Cam. And Café Du Monde, I know that your audience is very, very familiar. And here's what I've learned from my audience tends to be very similar to yours. Decision makers, forward-thinking leaders, people who are always trying to find a competitive advantage. And for years, I discovered in this very niche discipline around brand, every time the subject came up, people automatically defaulted to Apple, Amazon, Starbucks, all the experts who come in and talk to business audiences. They all use the same examples, Nike, Harley Davidson, Disney, Ferrari. And a few years ago, Cam, just around the time we met, actually just before, back at Torrey Pines, I started to conceptualize, wait a second, what are the commonalities between the greatest brands in the world, the gold standards like the Apples, the Nikes, the Ferraris, and the Harley Davidson, and what I call the big little legend, the small to medium-sized businesses selling otherwise ordinary products and services, basically commodities, and yet somehow are able to exert this incredible magnetic appeal in the marketplace. When's the last time you can remember going to Café Du Monde, for example, in New Orleans and just walking up and sitting in, grabbing a table because the place is empty and you had your choice of seats? I mean, that place is swarming with customers night and day.
Yes, it is.
364. And I started to say, wait a second, Cam. I'm saying, okay, you've got Café Du Monde over here, but up in the Pacific Northwest, the same dynamic is happening at Pike Place Fish Market in Seattle, but the same dynamic happens at a place on a lonely stretch of highway nearly 2 hours north of Toronto on Highway 11, about 5 miles past Orillia, Ontario. It's called Weber's, and they sell burger shakes and fries, and you cannot believe the long, and I mean long lineups of people waiting for burger shakes and fries. So I started to really explore and do a deep dive, and that's the subject of the forthcoming book. What is it about these big little legends? How can you be a small to medium-sized business and create this incredible magnetic inbound marketing effect without spending a fortune on ads?
Is it the same playbook, Gear, that Starbucks and Disney and Nike and all of them use? Is it the same playbook with a much smaller budget, or is it a different playbook?
Well, what we've identified through our endless research, Cam, and I'm a bit of a history geek. I think it's bigger than the brands that you just mentioned, quite frankly. So I thought, what a great exercise, especially with the magic of radio, Cam. You and I could participate, and the radio audience could participate in a live experiment to see how this works.
Well, you just without a what, yeah, let's see how it works.
Yeah, but you just mentioned, for example, Starbucks. Who else? Apple,
Nike.
Right? A few others, right?
Yep.
Okay. Now let's go to a more universal idea. Because if the idea itself is universal in nature, it wouldn't matter what we're applying it to, would it? It wouldn't matter whether it's a brand or a person, a place, an object, an event. So what I want the radio audience to do is to think beyond the product and service, and let's just have some live fun here. So, Cam, just for fun, what is the most famous painting in the world?
The Mona Lisa.
Right, but why?
Because it's famous. I think because is she smiling? Is she not smiling? Who was she? What was Da Vinci's motive?
Where did that fascination come from?
This is outside of my expertise, but I'm going to hypothesize. The fascination came from word of mouth. People were talking about it.
But somewhere, somehow, this word of mouth explosion was triggered in much the same way as the best brands in the world, in much the same way as the Big Little Legend. The pattern is incredibly consistent. So it's bigger than the painting. It's bigger than the cup of coffee at Starbucks. It's bigger than the running shoes sold by Nike. It goes, and it's much more than just the coffee and the beignets they sell at Café Du Monde. And so, in our research for the forthcoming book, what we identified is there's a glaring commonality that just separates legends in any discipline, whether it's the arts, the sciences, the humanities, industry, commerce. You know, what do they all have in common? And that really was the thrust of what we've been researching, and consequently closed the loop on the Mona Lisa. And there was a time, because I know by now the audience is a little bit, well, geez, why is it so famous, right? Because, damn, I asked the same question. And we were there about, I'm going to guess, 6 or 7 years ago. Have you been to the Louvre, by the way, my friend?
No, I have not.
If you walk into the Louvre from a purely statistical point of view, there's about, give or take, 38,000 paintings, exhibits, artifacts. And we've been there on several occasions, and it was on the last visit it hit me. The Louvre, as a museum, is attracting more than 10 million visitors a year. And there's 38,000 artifacts and paintings up for display. What if the museum itself is a metaphor for an overcrowded competitive market? Cam, can you think of overcrowded competitive markets?
I'm in one.
There you go. I know in Toronto, Canada, about 2 hours from where I'm from, there's about 48,000 realtors. So anyone listening who's in a crowded competitive market, you're no different than the Louvre, where 38,000 paintings are all competing for what? Recognition. To be noticed by who? The audience. And if you wander through the galleries of the Louvre, Cam, what you will see, and I want the audience to see in their mental movie screen, is gallery after gallery will be empty. There'll be magnificent, breathtaking paintings on the wall and nobody really watching them or studying them. Turn the corner, and guess what? It's like the mob rule. There's only one gallery where they stand in there like sardines. And I became fascinated to know why, because in the 19th century, the Mona Lisa was not the most famous painting in the world.
So I assume, Gare, that at some point in this recipe of what makes a brand stand out and what makes the Mona Lisa popular, my mind is immediately going to, well, there's got to be some quality of the product. You mentioned this Weber's Burgers. The burgers have got to be pretty good. You mentioned Pike's Place Fish Market in Seattle, sure, which I have been there. They've got, sure, you know, they've got seafood, but they also do that wonderful tossing of the fish. There's some element of attraction, of quality there. We can't build a brand based on junk.
No question, because then you're putting lipstick on a pig, but you've illustrated the point. Quality is table stakes. Quality is baseline entry. People don't go to Paris because of the superb subway and sanitation system.
Okay.
That's not why they go. Quality is a given. It's an assumption. And if you want to create a legendary brand, something that is truly irresistible, quality is just the jumping off point to where you got to go next. To your point, Cam, do you have to have, you know, decent burgers, fries, and milkshakes, and you have to have, you know, good fish products and great coffee, of course. But where does it go from there? And that really is the essence of what we discovered. And in the case of the Mona Lisa, it all boils down to, and in the case of every Big Little Legend we've ever studied, and the ones that I've been involved with personally, and personally involved with, it's the same recipe. So in the case of the Mona Lisa, we can always pinpoint the exact date when the turn of events really turned forever. And in the case of the Mona Lisa, it was August 21st, 1911, she was stolen. And she was stolen by an Italian handyman who hid out over the weekend, Monday morning, broad daylight. He walks out with the Mona Lisa under his smock, and she's gone for 2 years. Here's how not famous she was. It's 4 or 5 days before the authorities at the Louvre even noticed she was missing. Don't tell me she was this top-of-mind, slam-dunk goddess of top-of-mind brand awareness. No way. But when the authorities were called and the story hit the front page of the paper, And that story went all the way from Pittsburgh to Pensacola to Portland, Oregon, and beyond.
Gare, I got to interrupt you. We're going into break. We're going to go into break, and you are an expert at the cliffhanger. So exactly what it is that made the Mona Lisa so famous, we'll learn after break, and then how to apply this concept to our own businesses. You're listening to What's Working, brought to you by Regions. We'll be right back. We're back. You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. What's Working is brought to you by Regions. On the line with me is my friend Gare Maxwell. Gare's walking us through the story of the Mona Lisa, what made it so famous, and one of the quotes that I want to pull out from Gare's online video, which really turned me on for this topic, is you don't need to be a massive company with a colossal marketing budget to make a serious impact in the world today. And Gare, I want you to pick up exactly where you left off on the story of the Mona Lisa. What we still haven't learned from you is, what is this secret to this brand recognition? We know that the Mona Lisa was stolen, and we know that nobody knew it was gone for 4 or 5 days. Take it from there for us.
Yeah, that's great, Cam, and it sets us up for where we can go next. But essentially what happened when the Mona Lisa disappeared, I mean, it was front page news all over the world. She was a viral, think about this, man. She's a viral sensation before the invention of radio. All right? And what happened was, for a 2-year news cycle, the Mona Lisa gets millions and millions and millions of dollars of free publicity that no painting ever got before or since. Now, she was highly regarded, but she wasn't this, you know, massively, exalted top of mind brand awareness goddess that she is now. And so what happened was, there were conspiracy theories, the chief of police resigned in disgrace, there were headlines all over the place, and 2 years later, the thief, Vincenzo Perugia, tries to sell the Mona Lisa to an art dealer in his home country of Florence, Italy, and that's how they crack the case. And then once the police solve the mystery, she does a 2-week tour of Italy so they can all see Da Vinci's masterpiece one more time. And then, Cam, she's coming back. She's coming back to Paris under heavy armed guard, and more than 100,000 people are there to greet her.
Wow.
So what's the fundamental truth?
Oh, I'm digging. I'm trying to forecast what the fundamental truth is going to be. This is viral marketing.
Yeah,
this is
the truth.
Yeah.
Here's the truth, Cam, for everyone listening today. The Mona Lisa, the thief, Vincenzo Perugia, he got 8 months in jail for his crime. The people at the Louvre should have written the guy a check for $1 million. Here's why. What happened? Perugia walked out that day with another painting under his arm.
I guess the whole thing starts again, and they should punch the security guard in the face at the Louvre.
Well, I'm just saying, if Perugia walked out that day with another painting...
Oh, with a different painting. I understand what you're saying. Not the Mona
exactly.
Lisa.
That's
that becomes the famous painting
that you and I are talking about to a radio audience in Mobile, Alabama, and beyond.
Yeah.
It had, in other words, it had nothing to do, and this is a hard thing for business leaders to wrap their heads around. It's got nothing to do with the quality of the Da Vinci painting. There's 38,000 paintings and exhibits and artifacts in the Louvre. How many of them are world class? Every one of them. They're all great. Or otherwise they wouldn't have been in there. Which one is the only one getting the mobs, and I mean mobs, of attention? And I've seen this myself personally on several occasions. I'm just the guy who started to ask a question about it all. And so the lesson of the Mona Lisa is this. Art without a story, just paint on a canvas. A business without a story is just like every other business. And so consequently, in the word, that five-letter word called story, what's inside that? Inside that word is drama, mystery, intrigue, suspense, comedy, surprise. That's the world of stories. No legend was ever created in the history of humanity without a story. And that story is what actually makes people line up at Café Du Monde, Weber's, Pike Place, and on and on and on and on and on. We don't have enough time to talk about this. We might have to do another show someday. But my point is this. You're a business leader, and if you know that people don't go to Paris for subways and sanitation systems, you've got to figure out what's going to be your mythology, your story to bring people your way. Because the most of the business leaders I talk to, Cam, deep down, they would love it if more customers just came their way. If more just showed up, like the phone rang or they walked in or they got more emails in their inbox than they knew what to do with.
That's I'm not aware of any business people around here that would be upset
story,
about that.
Not by features, advantages, benefits.
Yeah. So, Gear, in saying that it's the story, and I love what you're getting into, can I substitute the word the narrative of the business? Each business has a narrative. Each business has a story or slash narrative. Yes or no?
Yes, but in fact, Sam, that's an interesting discussion point, because that elevates it for part of our theory now. If we're starting now, I think you have an opportunity to create what we call a tribal narrative. Nike has one, by the way. Nike has a three-word tribal narrative. What is it?
Just do it.
Right. Have they ever changed it or altered it since 1988?
To my knowledge, no. But let's define a tribal narrative. People are making notes now, by the way. So define a tribal narrative for me.
Tribal narrative, it's 2 to 6 words. You've got 2 to 6 words to own in the market, and then those 2 to 6 words are like a metaphorical nail that you use with every part of not only your marketing, but every customer touch point to accentuate and expand on whatever that sharp nail is. So consequently, Nike is an easy example, especially, you know, in something like here's and with no visuals and just the theater of the mind, Nike has been doing the Just Do It thing since 1988. How many different stories can they tell where the punchline, the end point, is always those three magic words? They can go to infinity and beyond.
An infinitive number, exactly.
Infinite. So they told, let me just see, they told stories about Jordan, Bo Jackson, who else? Kobe, LeBron, keep going. Serena Williams, Colin Kaepernick, they got into social justice. My well-educated guess is that Nike could go to infinity and never change those three magic words.
So let me, I love this gear. You've got my mind racing, and this is exactly what I want. So Nike is a product company. They have a tangible product. What about service companies?
What about, I'm sorry, I cut out there for just a second.
Nike has a tangible product, shoes, clothes, golf clubs, balls, whatever it may be. What about service companies? Does the same rule apply for service companies?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. I've been dying for you to ask this question. We launched, because we work by invitation only, Cam, and we get invited all over America to work with companies that can't quite figure out what is the tribal narrative, because the magic, the secret sauce, if you will, is to create a narrative that accurately reflects your company values. It's a little bit of we honor the Simon Sinek start with why process, but we go a little bit past it into the area, well, who are you beyond your products and services? Yeah, I understand there's your company name, but I'm not talking about, you know, name and your products and services. I'm talking about who are you beyond all that, okay? And so a great example to share here on the radio would be an engineering firm we worked with a while back out of Cincinnati. Now, Cam, let's have some fun with this. And your listeners should know you and I did not rehearse anything. We've not prepared. This is as live and as raw as it's going to get, right?
It's definitely live. It can't get too raw here. I got a reputation.
It's a family show. I get it.
That's right.
But what is the stereotype you would have about engineers?
Oh, short sleeve shirt, button down, glasses, pocket protectors. The most extroverted engineers will look at your shoes.
So imagine this engineering firm. They're based in Cincinnati, Ohio. How many engineering firms can you think are in that tri-state area, Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana?
Oh, there must be 100.
Hundreds, if not thousands.
Yeah.
So many. So what do? They do civil engineering. They do transportation engineering. They do land surveying, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And would you be willing to bet that they're all pretty good at it?
They're all pretty good, and you could hire anyone to do your job. I think I get your point. It's hard for these guys to stand out, and it's unnatural for this personality style to want to stand out.
Exactly. So I want everyone in the audience, and also, Cam, give me a heads up if we're coming to break. So
2 minutes.
But I want everyone in the audience to just kind of relate their own business, their own profession, to what these engineers were going through in Cincinnati, who really wanted to step into their own story and separate themselves from everybody else they would ever compete against. That's the essence of it. So you can make the argument that the engineering category in Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana is no different than a crowded marketplace at the Louvre in Paris, France. And so these engineers, the name of them, of the company, is the Kleinger's Group, right? And I sat down with the CEO the night before. We do these boot camp programs with senior executives. And I found out that the CEO over dinner had a favorite four-letter word.
Ooh.
Cam's favorite four-letter word, and I know, this is a family show. We're on What's Working. Jim Kleinger's favorite four-letter word is beer.
Oh.
Guy loves beer. He's a beer drinker, Cam. He's not a snooty wine connoisseur. And then we do the boot camp with his team, and we discover the team. And we had about a dozen or so of his senior folks with us that day, and I discovered through a number of exercises the team is kind of quirky. They kind of remind me of the personalities from that TV show called Cheers. And then when Jim showed me his brand-new building, they employ about 120 people, but he shows me the brand-new building. And inside that building, they got their own pub called Sharky's North Park Tavern. Are you seeing a pattern here?
Yeah, I think these would be engineers that I would enjoy. Gear, we got 30 seconds till we go. Listen, we're going to have to wrap up this story about service companies after the next break.
Let's pay the bills, take a break, Cam, and we'll finish the client story when we come back.
You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston, brought to you by Regions. We'll be back. Gear Maxwell. With the master of the cliffhanger story, Gear Maxwell. Gear, we got to get the solution to the engineering firm's challenge within the next 6 minutes and 20 seconds. After that, it's out of my hands. You got to let these people know they're sitting in their car, idling in their parking lot right now. So tell me, what happened to the engineering firm? They've got beer in the lobby. They got a CEO that likes beer. They got a bar in there. How did you make them different?
So what happened was, it's not that I made them different. We just facilitated a process, and they just started telling a story that was really them all along, but they couldn't articulate it. How many people, Cam, have you run into in the business world? They know they're different. They can't articulate it. All right? And so consequently, Kleinger's Group, as we talked about, and I know we're into the home stretch now,
We talked about you've got 2 to 6 words. Nike is a great example. Just do it. Okay? Boom. Never has to change. Find his group. You ready for it, Cam?
Go.
Good at math. Surprisingly human.
Good at math. Surprisingly human. And this is from an engineering firm. And I can just see them all smiling when they hear this and saying, yeah, that's us. And I can also see a customer who says, I got to hire an engineering firm. And then coming off a website or coming across a website that reads good at math, surprisingly human, going, these are my people.
And I, we don't have time to get into it on the radio, but anyone can go look on YouTube, for example, and see the number of internally created videos that these guys have done. They've created their own television station. It's called ATV. And so it's all been done internally. So the levels of team engagement, participation, enthusiasm have gone through the roof. And so, for example, picture a 3-minute video cam starring a roundabout engineer explaining how to drive in a roundabout while driving in a roundabout. And then where does every one of their YouTube videos end? The graphic comes up, Blinders group, good at math, surprisingly human.
Yeah.
So it's exactly the same story-based philosophy that every single Big Little Legend has ever been able to create. The tribal narrative is just a way you can really accelerate growth, especially in the digital age, and especially since people with attention spans being shorter. So look at it this way. If we reflect back to the Mona Lisa, the implications are this. Either a story happens to you, like for the Mona Lisa, it was dumb luck, okay? Or you got to make one happen. You know, dumb luck happened to a guy selling soup out in Manhattan. I don't know if you recall that story or not, Cam. There was a guy selling soup in Manhattan, and he suddenly got very, very busy, long, long lineups of customers. And so many of your radio listeners who are parked on the side of the road are already reflecting back to one of their favorite episodes of Seinfeld.
Oh,
yeah,
of course.
He got lucky, and the story happened to him, right? It happened. He didn't have anything, but my point is, you can wait for dumb luck, for lightning to strike, or you can be like the Finders do, or you can be like the story that you and I talked about when we met at Torrey Pines. I don't know, do you remember a signature story from that presentation about a guy up in Canada, one of the worst categories on planet Earth?
I do, yeah. I can't remember the name, but he had those bears.
Yeah, and 4 words, and it comes back to it. He's got 4 words that have anchored the brand to this day. Canada's huggable car dealer.
That's right. That's right.
And when I met Jim in 2002, he had 5 employees. He was doing about $1.5 million a year. 4 years later, we changed the story. Not the product or the price. We changed the story. But it became more than just a tagline. It became a complete way of life there, a cultural indoctrination, if you will. And so, you know, and Cam, you've seen the photographs where kind of like if Walt Disney imagined a used car lot, this is what it looks like with its hundreds and hundreds of teddy bears and mascots and merry-go-rounds. And so my point is, from a business point of view, the huggable car dealer transformed into a business that, as of 2019, employed 38 people and did north of a $50 million mark in annual revenue.
Yeah. Gare, what I've been doing is making notes along the way, and one of the signatures of my show is to try to wrap it up with notes that are takeaways for the show. So let me recap these things, and then I'm going to give you the final word, and we'll end the show. First, it has nothing to do with the quality of the product. The quality is table stakes. Quality must be given. It must be standard. Nike couldn't have done it with a bad shoe. That shoe's got to stand up to the pressures of the sports that it's being played in. However, so quality is a given. Number 2, art without a story is paint on a canvas. Business without a story is a business like any other. It's not unique. It's not distinct. You need the story. Number three, the story, the tribal narrative, 2 to 6 words, and the best one that we can think of right now, just do it. And that is going to last to, as you said, infinity and beyond. Everything they do can go back to just do it. Like you said, you keep hitting that nail on the head and it only drives it deeper in the customer's mind. The tribal narrative is the story. The story must reflect the company values. You gave us the story of the engineering company, which I loved, and you get a sense of who these people are and what their values are. And then I like this one, and it makes us put our thinking caps on. The story can happen to you, or you must make the story. And my suspicion is it's rare that people out there have the story happen to them. Most of us, I'm raising my hand here, have to make the story. We have to develop our narrative. What did I miss, Gare?
In fact, Sam, I don't know that anyone has ever recapped the essence of Big Little Legends better. So going forward, it now becomes less of a marketing issue and it's a leadership issue. So for anyone
it's a leadership
issue. It's now identifying your role as a leader to create that level of strategic drama and answer the question, who are you beyond your product and service?
GareMaxwell.com, folks. GareMaxwell.com. You're listening to What's Working. We'll have another show for you next week. Have a good weekend, folks. Happy 4th of July.